Hello, everybody. This is Marshall Poe. I'm the founder and editor of the New Books Network. I've published several academic books, and one of the things I found frustrating is my inability to get them picked up in the press. There really is no PR service specifically oriented toward academic books. Recently, however, I had the opportunity to work with a PR firm in New York, RLM, on a book that I recently published. And I have to say, they did a remarkable job at a very low price. And this got me thinking. I wonder if the New Books Network and RLM could provide a service that would promote academic books. So the folks at RLM and I put our heads together and we came up with a package. It is specifically targeted toward people like you, people who write academic books. So if you're interested, you should go to the NBN website and click publish. Publicize your book, and there you'll find some information about the services that the NBN and RLM are offering. What we really want to do is provide you with value for money. As far as we know, no such service exists. This is the first of its kind, and we really hope it is successful, and we hope that it helps you get the word out about your academic book.
Welcome to the New Books Network.
Hello and welcome to another new episode of New Books in Islamic Studies, which is part of the New Books Network. I'm your co-host, Shobhana Xavier. I hope you're doing well and staying safe wherever you are, and thank you so much for joining us today. As you know, each new episode of New Books in Islamic Studies engages with an author who has published a new book that is relevant to the field of Islamic studies. Today we are joined by New Books in Islamic Studies own host, Christian Peterson, who's an assistant professor in the Department of Philosophy and Religious Studies at Old Dominion University. In his new edited volume, Muslims in the Movies, a Global Anthology, which is part of the Mizan series and was published by iFlix Foundation and Harvard University Press, we are introduced to the subject of Muslims in film. The volume contains 19 chapters that engage a range of film industries, including Hollywood, but also movies from the Philippines, Indonesia, Nigeria, Italy, Australia, Saudi Arabia, and much more. The collection challenges its readers to take seriously the ways in which Muslims are represented in films throughout the globe, be it through a close analysis of a film, such as Wajda, or films about North American Muslims, such as Malcolm X or Muhammad Ali. In other instances, authors guide the readers through accessible analysis of particular Muslims in movies and the cinematography or the directors who directed the films, which lead to discussions around Islamophobia, diaspora politics, issues of gender and sexuality, identity politics, and much more. The overall study then welcomes viewers to rethink the ways in which films can be studied as a critical text, and then opens up possibilities for multidimensional engagement with Muslims in films, especially films such as sci-fi and romantic comedies and biopics. This accessibly written volume will be a great text to incorporate into courses on religion and Islam and film or popular culture, and will be of interest to students of Islam, gender and sexuality studies, media studies, diaspora and immigration studies, and much more. In our conversation today, Christian and I spoke about how to approach the study of Muslims in film, some of the distinctive features of these contributions and ways to incorporate this text into the classroom, and much more. So without any further delay, here's my conversation with Christian Peterson about his new edited volume, Muslims in the Movies, a Global Anthology. Hey, Christian, how are you doing?
Great. Thanks so much for having me on the podcast.
Oh, I'm excited. I mean, we're on the same podcast as both, but we rarely get to hang out with each other. I just hear your voice on the podcast. It's nice to be able to chat with you for a change.
Yes, likewise. I'm going to get grilled here. So
oh. I will not do that.
It's probably trickier on this side of the podcast. So we'll find out.
Yeah, you'll let us know at the end, right? So we're talking today about your new edited volume that came out, Muslims in the Movies, a Global Anthology. I think our listeners know a little bit about you. You've been on the podcast talking about your previous scholarship. So maybe we could talk a little bit about this particular topic. Like, how did you get interested in religion and pop culture or Islam and film? And we'll take it from there.
Sure. Yeah, thanks. So, my main research has been on Islam and China. It's been on this totally other thing. And this kind of had roots long ago. I took a course, I did a year at Humboldt State University, and I took a course called like Cinema and the Sacred, I think it was, with this professor, Stephen Jenkins. And that was kind of my first introduction of like even thinking about this stuff. And it was cool. The guy was kind of, you know, out there in terms of like the stuff we were studying. So it was fun, but then it kind of was dormant in the background. And then when I was doing my PhD, when I was doing language study, a lot of the stuff I would do there was related to like foreign language films to kind of help kind of understand language within, you know, more realistic settings, as opposed to, you know, in our textbooks and things like that. So I started doing some stuff like that. And I wrote a couple of papers, you know, but it was still just kind of a tangential thing. And it wasn't until I got my first gig at Gustavus Adolphus College, where we had a January term, J term, and we could teach whatever we wanted. It was kind of like the type of courses that were meant to be kind of fun and exciting and kind of engage students at this small liberal arts college, you know, over their winter break, you know, that they maybe might not take normally. So I proposed doing this religion and film course. And I got to teach it a couple of times. And as I started to try to figure out like the terrain of scholarship on religion and film, I found that there was like really nothing on Muslims and Islam. And the work that was out there was pretty much, you know, the representation of Muslims in film is bad, for lack of a better word. So, you know, of course, there was the work of people like Jack Shaheen, who's kind of documented this long history, particularly in Western and primarily Hollywood film, and shown this kind of 100-year history of largely negative, either in kind of an Orientalist kind of fantastic way, you know, kind of Aladdin type depictions, or a more kind of terroristic framing, you know, not only after 9/11, but certainly highlighted after 9/11. And I was like, man, this is not really what I want to be, you know, talking about with my students. Like, I want them to know about this stuff, but I want them to also understand that, you know, Muslim creatives are making films. And, you know, even at the time I was teaching, there's lots of great films, you know, in a Western context, because this is what my students were able to access. But then, of course, in a global context, there's so much. So I was like, ugh, like I didn't, I just felt icky. And yeah, I was like, I want more for them to be able to work with here. So, so I, you know, kept diving in terms of like my own research and that kind of, you know, there was this kind of like circle of my interests deepening and then my search for research and then trying to kind of work on some of my own analysis as well. And that's kind of like where the interest began. And then, of course, you know, my first year of teaching, I was also finishing my dissertation. And then I was, you know, in a visiting position. So I was trying to get the book out and do all these things that you do when you're on the job market. So I was teaching this course, but I wasn't really actively pursuing any kind of research agenda on the subject itself. And then it was a few years later, I was working on all sorts of things, and I got invited to this meeting by Michael Pregill, who was at the time editor of this new endeavor called Mizan. And it was actually, I was invited because of my podcasting endeavors. It was kind of, it wasn't necessarily digital humanities, but it was kind of like, how do we do scholarship in different ways? So there was people that were kind of doing more public-facing scholarship. There's people that were doing digital humanities projects. And it was a really great meeting. But while we were there, Michael was kind of thinking about how Mizan could do some like different things. And it wasn't out yet, but the first volume in their new book series was called Muslim Superheroes, Comics, Islam, and Representation. And this was a collection that's great. It's out now, edited by A. David Lewis and Martin Lund. And, you know, so kind of thinking about that theme, I was like, oh, man, it'd be great to have like a Muslims and film book. You know, like this is cool that there's a Muslim and comics book, but we should also, you know, think about this. And Michael was great. He was like, this is an awesome idea, was really encouraging. And it was, you know, I probably would not have started kind of thinking about like, let's do an edited volume if it wasn't for him. So that was one of the big catalysts. And then once I kind of had the idea and kind of shaped what I was hoping the volume would look at, I sent basically an open call, and I got like such a like a wide and awesome response. It was really much more than I expected, to be honest. You know, a typical edited book, you think, you know, maybe like 8 to 12 essays. And so I got like 80, 90 proposals, and I was like, what the hell am I going to do with all this? So I was working through that, and then, you know, trying to figure out what was the best ones. And as it started to come together, it seemed like the best way for this volume to work would be one that was kind of attempting at a more of a coverage approach, in the sense of, you know, how can a reader of this volume be exposed to kind of the broadest idea about what is this relationship between Muslims and film? And many of these were proposed in a way that I thought they were going to be able to be like used in a classroom or read by somebody who's totally unfamiliar with these subjects. So that's kind of how I started to narrow down this. There was a bunch of other really great essays actually as well that were a little bit more researchy, a little bit more kind of attentive to, I don't know what the best word is, like the scholarly nuance, you know, a little bit more jargony. So I actually put together and proposed another, a second volume from the same proposal. Wow. So that one is called New Approaches to Islam and Film, which came out around the same time with Routledge. But this one, I really was hoping for, like, you know, I was trying to think back to those students in the classroom at Gustavus and to some of the people that I had, you know, over the years encountered that were, you know, key scholars in religion and film, you know, as a kind of sub discipline or subfield, where Islam really wasn't part of the conversation. Because part of what's going on in a lot of the scholarship with religion and film, it's very Western, or historically it's been very Western centric. And it's often been related to thinking about more like theological interpretations of film. So like what can we think about when we watch the films of Terrence Malick or something like this? Like, how does that, you know, spark theological inquiry or these kinds of things? So not all religion and film scholarship does that, but a lot of it did that. And so when you're thinking about like, here are, you know, the terrorists, those types of films and that type of work really weren't kind of part of that conversation. So I was like, this, you know, this volume hopefully can kind of allow those people to think about the themes that they're already doing, but in a kind of much broader context and kind of across different traditions, rather than being focused, you know, more in a Christian context, or even a kind of, you know, thinking of Hollywood as maybe a post-Christian secular context where Christianity is still, you know, shaping how films are understood, even if they're not made by a Christian filmmaker or something like this. So that's kind of what the goal was. And then, of course, making an edited volume, I found takes like a million years.
Yeah. And so how long did this one take?
So this one took forever. I'm very, very grateful to the contributors who were extremely patient over the many different stages. The other thing that happened with this one is, you know, because I had such a great response to the call, and there was so much really interesting stuff happening, I wanted to include more. So the people that I invited, I basically said, can you do what you propose, but can you do it in like 5,000 words?
Right.
Which for a lot of listeners, if they don't know, that is like much shorter than your traditional academic article. Mm-hmm. So ultimately, I forget exactly how many here, because I don't have chapter numbers, but I think it was
chapters. I just counted.
How many?
19, including your introduction.
Oh, okay. Great.
20. Yeah.
Yeah. So this is like a lot more than, you know, a lot of editor volume. So there was a lot more moving parts. And it took a lot of work. I mean, these essays, I think, are really great because we really did work on kind of the craft of writing as well. Not only like, you know, what are you saying? And is this argument sound and strong and convincing? But also like, how are we going to say this in the clearest way? Like, how can I make the same argument, you know, with 50 words less and ones that, you know, my first year undergrads are going to understand. So that was part of it too, why it took so long. But I think it's well worth the wait. I hope, at least, fingers crossed.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, one of the things I noticed when I was reading it was kind of, as you mentioned, the 5,000 words, which meant that it was so accessible. It was really concise and went to the point. And I thought to myself, oh, this is a chapter that I could easily incorporate into my class. You know, I teach religion and pop culture, and I teach all these other things as well. And so, you know, the chapter on Malcolm X or Muhammad Ali, or the chapters on Sufism and film, or Bollywood and Sufism, you know, these were written so accessibly that really came through. And it's good to hear that was actually the intention from day one. But yeah, we're talking about 19 chapters. That's a lot of people to kind of coordinate. Yeah. Yeah. And these are also chapters that are ranging, as the title of the book says, it's like a global perspective. So we have regions, you know, you're having case studies from Nigeria to the Philippines, to Bollywood, to American film, to Nordic film, to Italian film. So I think that was really, really fascinating. How did you how do you maintain focus, or something that really brings everything together when you are dealing with such diversity and thinking like you want to expose everybody to Islam and film or cinema in a complicated way, but you still need an anchor to bring it together? Like, so was that something that you were thinking about as you were editing this volume?
Yeah, definitely. Certainly. The other kind of part of this, which I think makes the global much more kind of forefront, is, I mean, there's a lot of really prominent Muslim majority societies that have, you know, amazing film industries. Mm-hmm. You know, South Asia, of course, Bollywood has a long tradition of Muslims in film, although not always positive. But then we have, you know, Egyptian cinema, Iranian cinema. So there's lots of places that have these kind of rich traditions. And when, you know, again, when I was trying to, you know, think about this work that was out there previously, much of that work was happening in a kind of a media studies or national cinema context. So what that meant was, if people are writing about, you know, Indonesian cinema, for example, or Southeast Asian cinema more broadly, of course, Islam is part of that conversation, but it was often kind of lurking in the background. It was not something that was kind of really drawn to the front of, you know, how does being in a Muslim majority society, or even a context where, you know, Islam is interpreted through you know, public institutions or these things, how does that shape both what filmmakers are producing, but then also kind of the expectations of the audiences? So this wasn't happening in a lot of the scholarship. Of course, there's really, you know, great counters, right? Examples that do go against this. So I always think of Nassim Pak Shiraz's book on Shia Islam and Iranian cinema as like one of these ones where Islam is kind of centered in the study of film itself. But a lot of it coming out of media studies was not thinking about this. So this was kind of the other component I wanted to like think about, or, you know, really I wanted to read about, you know, how is Islam, how is being Muslim, both as an audience and as media makers, affected in those contexts? So, so this was the other part of it. So it's kind of like bridging these two scholarly subfields of national cinemas and then religion and film, and kind of cross breeding their thematic foci and thinking about how can we bring these together in a kind of a new way. So in all the essays, you know, it's they're concerned with, you know, where does being Muslim fit into filmic production, and then also reception. So several of the essays do really interesting stuff with thinking about not only, you know, like reading a film as a text, right, which is another kind of dominant trend in this, but more thinking about the social analysis of the film industry. So there's two essays that do this really well in the volume. One focused on Kannywood or the Hausa film industry in Nigeria, and the tension between, you know, publics that are skeptical of film because they see it promoting, you know, lax piety or, you know, other things that they found not acceptable within the local context. So how does making film in that social context, how is it affected? There's another one that looks at kind of the classical period of Egyptian cinema and the role of religious scholars at Al-Azhar University, as serving kind of as a clearinghouse for public consumption, what, you know, deeming scripts and films acceptable for, you know, a Muslim public is kind of how it's understood. So, you know, this is kind of, I guess, the through line is where does Islam shape either the social context or the narrative, you know, narrative story, or even the aesthetic. So in the essay that you mentioned on Sufism and Bollywood, the author Syed Haidar is looking at not how Sufism really operates in South Asian society, but kind of a secular understanding of spiritual praxis. Mm-hmm. You know, what are like the vernacular sensibilities of Sufism, and how does that operate in film? And for him, it's through kind of visual aesthetics, and then you know, kind of sonic and musical interpretations. So this is kind of the through line of like what Islam, what being Muslim, how it functions in these films, in these different contexts. And that was the other kind of goal for me in terms of kind of like trying to be global, is that I wanted to show that there is diversity. You know, when I'm talking about being Muslim or defining Islam, I'm not, as an editor and the authors aren't trying to police the boundaries of this is Islam, this is not, this is Orthodox, you know, Muslim behavior, this is heretical, right? It's not that. It's, you know, really concerned about like how is being Muslim defined within these local contexts, and then how does that take shape, both in the films and the settings and the design, and then again in the audience expectations. I think, you know, when you move from one cinematic social context to another, audiences are going to assume different things. So, you know, what is made legible to a American audience, or I guess I should say a North American audience for our Canadian listeners.
Yeah.
Those signifiers are going to be different than what might be legible to an Egyptian audience or an Indonesian audience. So I think some of the authors take those kind of things in account as well, right? How does everyday Islam look? You know, what does it look like in these different cinematic contexts?
Yeah. And I really loved this aspect of the edited volume, is that you were kind of exposed. Like, I didn't really know much about Nordic, you know, cinema or Italian.
No, nor did I.
Yeah. So reading about that and being introduced to some of the you know, representation politics and the history in those geographical spaces and media cultures was, for me, really, really fascinating. And for me, I think this edited volume really just comes to show how films and media generally can really act as important prisms to interrogate some broader questions. Like, one of the other things I noticed throughout.
Ooh, that was good. I like that. I should write that down.
Yeah. You could take it.
Steal that.
Yeah, do it. Go for it. I'll give it to you.
No, I'll cite you.
No. But I think, you know, the way in which gender and sexuality comes up in all these different contexts, you know, the chapter by Alberto Fernandez Carbajal, I don't know if I'm pronouncing the last name correct, in terms of queerness in Ismaili diaspora in the Canadian context is fascinating. Representations of women's bodies, gendered spaces. And so the ways in which, you know, the medium of film, as you said, if you engage with it as a text, what that gives you the capacity to see and understand in a new way, or politics in our diaspora, especially in the Australian film, or humor. So I think the themes in these edited volume, it's really, really fascinating. So I don't know if you have, that wasn't a comment. That was not a question. That was a comment, but if you have any thoughts about that.
We're at the conference, right? This is more of a comment than a question. No, that's great. But
high five the chapters. That's what I'm trying to do.
No, thank you. Yeah, you're doing a better job than I am of highlighting. Again, all the contributors were great. And there's a couple different ways, I guess, to read this book, which is kind of what you made me think about. So some of them are one way to kind of think about it is the approaches. You know, several of the chapters kind of do things in a similar way. So you mentioned M. Cooper Harris's and Michael Muhammad Knight's respective essays on Muhammad Ali and Malcolm X. And in both of those, they take this kind of genealogical approach, right, and look at kind of the long history of representations of these figures and then place them within their historical context. So, you know, why, you know, around 2001, is Muhammad Ali represented this way, right? And why is he in this period represented in this way? So both of those chapters are great. And of course, I mean, who doesn't want to read about Malcolm X and Muhammad Ali? So,
those
do kind of a similar approach. And I think it demonstrates those changes over time and how film is kind of a product of its social context. Mm-hmm. So there's that, there's these kind of social approaches that I mentioned, thinking about film industry. Others take a more kind of focused approach in the sense that they look at a specific screenwriter or a director or even a single film, like some of the ones you mentioned. We also have people focused on Moroccan film, Iranian film, British film that take this kind of approach. Some of them look at the kind of national framing that I mentioned earlier. So these were some of the ones you mentioned, right? One of these does this in an Italian context. How are Muslims represented in an Italian context, which is, you know, kind of few and far between, but we see a similar function in their kind of deployment in these films. And then how in Australian context, how Muslim filmmakers are kind of pushing back against a kind of white centering narrative that excludes any kind of, racial or religious diversity. And this is done through rom-coms to kind of question that, centering of whiteness. Also in the Philippines, which of course many people probably know has a significant Muslim population, although they're a minority and they're often kind of excluded from the kind of Filipino public that we think of. So Vivian Angeles looks at how Muslim filmmakers are telling new narratives, especially around women's stories. So this one is a really, really interesting essay as well. But then there are these kind of cross threads that I don't really lay out. I failed in that respect, but you made me rethink of like ways of thinking about this, because there's several that kind of cross this idea of how does gender operate in a Saudi Arabian context or in a Moroccan context or in the Philippines? How does sexuality operate in filmic depictions, especially in a Western context where there's such a rigid idea of what Muslimness and specifically Muslim masculinity is going to look like. So these kind of contest and push back against those kind of rigid definitions. So there are different ways to kind of, I guess, choose your own adventure through the volume.
Yeah.
But also I'm hoping, as you mentioned a while ago now, is that a lot of them hopefully can plug into other conversations that people are having in their classrooms or in their work. If you're working on, North American Islam, teaching a course on Muslims in North America, right, you might want to include, this essay on, queer Muslims in a Canadian context, or some of the transnational ones too, right, which a lot of these essays are looking at as well.
Right. Yeah. And I think that's one of the beauties of the edited volume, is that if you were thinking of teaching an Islam and film or cinema or pop culture class, you could go here. But if you're also teaching these other courses on either diaspora or immigration or gender, sexuality, race, there is enough standalone chapters that you could draw from and, engage with the film or the social context. And since we're talking about teaching and you've taught these courses, I mean, do you have any advice for folks either in terms of how to incorporate this text into a course, but how to think about teaching either like an Islam and film class or generally like a religion and film class? What are some things that you figured out along the way that you wish others to know or you wish you had known earlier?
Wow, that's a good question.
Are you going to also take that down?
You're good at this. You're really good. I should just retire as an interviewer because you're like leading the charge here. So let's see. There's a bunch of different ways I think people can incorporate it. Hopefully it's easy, because instead of like, how to teach these films,
right,
they're really meant as kind of partners to watching a film and hopefully larger conversations. So one of the films that comes to mind one of the chapters that comes to mind is Elia Pisano's on Wajda, which is a Saudi Arabian film.
Yeah.
And this is the kind of first, I guess we can think of it as transnational, because it was viewed in, film festivals and these kind of things, and really has more of a global viewership than a local context. Mm-hmm. But this one actually started off for Elliot, he used it in his classes. And the first couple of drafts were relying on some of his work that he did with the Wabash Center for Teaching and Learning about how to use this film in his classes. So we worked through it and thought about, like, instead of saying this is how I teach this film, like what are the kind of objectives I'm trying to reveal to my students, right, or to foster for my students when I show this film. And that film's, I think, a really good example. At least, I'm in an American context. Most of my students, like, I don't have a lot of like international students. I'm at a regional institution, so a lot of them don't even like know Muslims. Like, they've never met Muslims. So I teach a course called Muslims and Media, and there I try to, instead of like focusing on these kind of like negative portrayals, which of course we cover, but I try to like show films like this. And Elliot's essay, I think, does this really well, because there's lots of, the stereotypical things you could think of when you think of Saudi Arabia, and the film kind of does get at those, you know, like issues of patriarchy or issues of, you know, women's dress or these kind of things. I guess those are kind of the low hanging fruit in a sense of like thinking about film analysis. In Eliot's essay, he also gets into like issues of girlhood and what might it mean to be a girl in a kind of patriarchal society, and like how does patriarchy get re-inscribed, not through necessarily a male-female relationship, but also through being a girl and through institutions like school or the home or these kind of things. And then he also gets at, you know, things that people, a casual observer might miss. So he has a whole long section on kind of the knowledge of the Quran and scripture and utilizing scripture within a social context, which is a big plot line in this film. I won't give it away. Mm-hmm. But he does this really well. And a lot of the essays do this, right? They're not necessarily saying like, here is this, and this is just my analysis, but they're really more great ways to like think along with, mm-hmm. you know, view the film along with. Mm-hmm. So for me, that's what I'm trying to do. And I'm actually using several of these chapters, you know, in my course. So the other thing for me, one of the challenges teaching, you know, media in general, but film specifically is access, okay. You know, and there's lots of great films, especially foreign films, that would be awesome. But one, they might not be accessible linguistically, you know, have subtitles or these kind of things. But what I've had to do is rely on, you know, things like Netflix or Amazon, or, you know, even my library doesn't carry a lot of things that students can just log into and then view. And one of my frustrations is those often change, you know, so I might teach a film one semester, I want to teach it again the next semester, and it's no longer accessible on whatever distributor. But that also pushes me to think about, you know, new films each semester, even though it's more prep, but it's interesting, and it's fun. Students, I think, like these. So that's one of the things that's kind of shaping the films I select, is like what is accessible. I've kind of lost my steam there.
I think we've talked about this, as I've had the same issue in my religion and pop culture classes, that I built my, I don't know, the film section around one particular thing that's on Netflix, and before class starts, it's like taken away, right? Which is then
worst when they do it like the second week into the class.
Yeah. And so then I have like a rotation of films that I've used. The accessibility is it's a really important one, which has made me think with some of my teaching assistants about how to navigate it. Which brings you into this whole other pop culture realm that's just not media based. Do you have you've mentioned some strategies around accessible, being able to access the films, and how to incorporate and watch the films, but also incorporate some of these chapters. Any other kind of pedagogical advice for listeners who teach these types of courses to keep in mind?
What else do we do? So for me, you know, I'm in my course, the way that we're framing it is, we're kind of thinking about it as a larger continuum of media representation. So we have a whole section where we look at film and journalism and how that is another kind of, dominant narrative that shapes this kind of interpretation of film, that there's a relationship between how Muslims are portrayed in public and then how people are going to be able to read or interpret those. So again, because of the context I'm in, and I know you're in a totally different context in terms of your student body, but for mine, it's a lot of unlearning in the sense of where do these kind of dominant narratives about Muslims come from? And then how can we deconstruct those and think about those you know, in new ways. So like, you know, why are terrorist acts that are perpetrated by somebody who is identified as Muslim, like overreported, you know, I think it's like 7 or 8 times more than, you know, if it was like a white supremacist or something like this.
Right.
You know, for my students, they're like surprised by this. They're like, wait, like, yeah, why would that happen? Mm-hmm. So, you know, part of what I'm doing in my classes is trying to think about that. But then, you know, I'm really interested in, you know, how Muslim filmmakers, however that might be defined, or people that, you know, I kind of in my broader work am trying to think about an idea of a quote unquote Muslim cinema, which is informed by Islam. So in the sense of, you know, not that it's necessarily making theological arguments, but in the sense that Islam shapes the social body, either of the narrative context or of the audience reception context, that Islam is going to be part of that analysis. Mm-hmm. So, you know, the films that I use in my course are not always explicitly or overtly related to Islam. So one film that I really liked recently is Mahdi Diop's Atlantics or Atlantique. I don't know if you've seen this one. It's pretty recent, but this one kind of looks at a supernatural world that's informed by kind of Muslim popular culture and ideas about jinn and kind of possession and these kind of things. But then it's dealing with like real social issues of immigration and diaspora. So, you know, a lot of viewers might not pick up on that kind of archive that's rooted in Islamic ideas, which of course can be interpreted and narrated in different ways across different societies. So that story might be told in a different way if it wasn't you know, in a West African context. If it was in a South Asian context or a Southeast Asian context, it might be told differently. But I think that's kind of the stuff I'm trying to get at. You know, and when I'm looking at, you know, other types of like transnational type things, or what some people have called accented cinema, in the sense of you know, diaspora populations talking about new experiences. I think these can be really interesting ways to get at a lot of these ideas of how Islam might be interpreted in a new context, whether it's in a British context or a North American context, and how that relates to understandings of Islam in some sort of, you know, quote unquote homeland or something like this. And those kind of tensions, I think, come out really strongly for at least for the types of students that I'm dealing with, because it kind of makes it relatable and different at the same time, right? So they can kind of empathize with these experiences that happen in these kind of contexts. And several of the essays do that, right? Like this one that you mentioned on, you know, queer Ismaili diaspora. There's another chapter that focuses on, you know, British Muslims and the kind of changing depictions of British Muslims before the 1989 Rushdie affair and after. This is kind of, for Claire Chambers, the author of that chapter, kind of the turning point where these depictions start to change significantly. So, yeah, so those are some of the kind of, I guess, issues or tensions I'm trying to get at in my class.
Yeah.
But I would say it's dependent on, you know, who your students are, because I imagine you have lots of international students, you have a much more cosmopolitan student body, probably very linguistically diverse. I mean, I bet your students like bring you really cool, you know, cultural productions, not only film, but to think about. Does that happen to you?
Yeah. I mean, when I teach, I've noticed kind of my syllabus for the religion and pop culture class change every semester, where I'm incorporating like K-pop and, you know, things from, I don't know, a Tamil film cinema, which is more South Indian. I've been incorporating Turkish film culture as well. So it's always fascinating to kind of, as you're saying, see what's happening. And then you're kind of always on your toes, right? When you're teaching things like this, is to see what the more recent trends are. And it's I don't know if you find this for yourself. I just find it as an opportunity to explore and have fun. And so I tend to, in these classes, incorporate media or pop culture aspects that I'm also thinking through, and I just want to think through with my students. I haven't quite figured it out. So I tend to be a bit more exploratory and curious in this pop culture class, primarily because the students who are in the course as well are in a similar space.
Yeah.
If we could shift gears a little bit, I'm keeping an eye on the time as well. Do you have any advice for folks in terms of editing a volume? You've clearly edited now two volumes, you were saying, around this topic, and it's fantastic, and I'm very excited about engaging with the other one as well. But for those who are maybe thinking about editing a volume or in the process, I mean, what advice would you give to our listeners who are interested in learning about the process?
Sure. So it's challenging. And I've thought about this many times, that I am a bad editor. I am not a very good editor in many ways.
But you've edited so many volumes.
Well, yes, but it's all because of the patience of my lovely contributors. I guess what I've learned, so I'm not speaking from my own successes, but I think you really need to be almost singularly focused to really get the an edited volume out in a timely way. So you know, you want to be able to get your author's work, read through it, get revisions back quickly, and keep things moving. That was one of my failures, was I was not able to kind of keep things moving along the production line in a timely way. So that would be one thing to do. But I think one of the things that I think was successful about this was not like the work done on the volume itself, but I know this is hard to do, especially in kind of the moment we're in, but is building kind of strong and diverse networks of people. Part of why I think I was able to bring together all these people working in these different contexts is because I've been, you know, trying to cultivate those relationships over time. So I guess kind of thinking about things long term. You know, if you have an idea in mind, you might want to start connecting with people, you know, that might be in that, you know, area of study, you know, well before you say, hey, do you want to contribute to this volume? Mm-hmm. And I have to admit that while I did an okay job of kind of global coverage, I just really regret that we don't have anything on Turkish cinema. Just because of social conditions of different things, I wasn't able to include a chapter on that, which I think is a big failing, because it's such an important film industry. But that's kind of a side note I did want to recognize. And I guess thinking about like who the reader is, I think is important. You know, a lot of edited volumes are like very academic in nature. They're intended for a very academic audience. So if that's who you're aiming for, then like, you know, go for it. You know, that's one thing. But I mean, there's different ways of going about this. I thought that was one of the unique parts of this volume, was we all kind of agreed and really bought into writing for a public that was not experts and that would be interested. And, you know, some people might be coming for one reason, but then because of the way the book is written, they would read on into other chapters. This was kind of the hope. So for us, like focusing on these kind of shorter, more readable chapters, I think was one of the things that makes this volume a little bit different than a lot of stuff. So I think thinking about audience, and then of course you'd want to think about what press is going to help you reach that audience best. So, you know, perhaps, you know, this volume, one of the benefits is it's was published as a inexpensive paperback. So people can, you know, hopefully use it in classes or at least get it for themselves. Whereas the other volume that is more academically focused is published in a research series on religion and film through Rutledge. Because we, you know, as, you know, thinking about that volume, I was thinking there's a kind of different audience for it. Although the nice thing about that is you can get that if you have institutional access for free, you can get digital copies. So that is nice. But yeah, so I think the press is important too in thinking about where you want your book to be. What do you want it to be doing? Because, I mean, if you are in a, you know, institutional setting where scholarship matters, edited books don't do a whole lot. So, you know, you probably want to think of the afterlife of the book more than, you know, oh, is this press a little more prestigious than that press? Probably does not matter for, you know, tenure and promotion and those kind of things. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if that's helpful, but.
Yeah, that's super helpful. I think, you know, these are things that you often don't think about until you're kind of confronted with it. So it's great to get your perspective on it.
Sure.
Are there, I mean, any final things you want to mention? I think we could keep talking forever because this is fantastic. But before we kind of wrap up in terms of the volume you want readers to take away or anything like that.
Well, there was one essay that it's kind of a unique essay. So it didn't really come up in the conversation because it doesn't plug into, you know, other kind of thematic strands easily. But this one was this essay by Hussein Rashid.
Yes.
That I really, really love. And Hussein is a good buddy of mine. And so we talked a lot about this and how to frame it. And anyway, so what his essay is about is it's on kind of secondary Muslim characters, people that he ends up calling incidental Muslims, right? And these are, he looks at a bunch of sci-fi films, which is his foray, that he's the expert in those, and looks at, you know, how does being Muslim, right? So visibly Muslim, right? Either if they're signified through a name or clothing or some other kind of characteristics shape these characters, but where Islam is not kind of pushing the narrative forward. So to me, this was one of the really cool kind of theoretical contributions that came out of the volume, because there certainly are lots of these types of characters. And I think probably with, you know, more recent pushes by, you know, film insiders to have greater Muslim representation, this idea of the kind of incidental Muslim, I think, is going to be really useful and important because, you know, there's going to be more of these types of characters that they are Muslim. Being a Muslim is important to them, but it's not necessarily part of the narrative of the show or the film. So that was a really cool essay too. And I think that could probably work in a lot of context and in classrooms and things like that. Yeah, I don't know if there's other things. I hope people will check it out. And thank you very much for speaking so highly of it. I don't know if you do that for all your guests, but yeah. It was very nice to hear that you thought the volume was very good.
It was fantastic. You know, Hussein, as you just mentioned, Hussein Rashid's chapter, the idea of the incidental Muslim, and like as I was reading it, I was thinking back to the book of Eli, is it Eli? Or I always forget how to.
I think it's Eli.
Eli, yeah. The Book of Eli with Denzel Washington was in that film, right? I was like, oh, this is amazing. So even with some of the chapters, but especially with Hussein Rashid's, I was rethinking some of the perceptions that I had as I had watched it before. I had thought about it theoretically. So yeah, it's a good chapter to shout out. And all the chapters, I think, are doing fantastic work. And well done, Christian. Thank you for it with us. Yeah. Before I let you go, you know, the tradition, you know, how we roll on this podcast. And it's good segue because you also mentioned Hussein Rashid. What are some things that you're working on these days or, you know, thinking about if we're not, you know, we're all struggling to work?
Right. Yeah. Well, I mean, for the past while now, over a year, I've been like working on like, you know, seventh grade math and, you know, fourth grade English with my kids. And so good. That has been fun.
Yes.
In general, I'm still working on this kind of Muslim cinema and thinking about, you know, I'm more interested in Muslim media makers and creatives rather than some of this kind of documenting of the negative representations that continue to come out, of course. That's an important work, but that's not the work that I really want to do. Mm-hmm. So I'm still working on this kind of idea. For people that want to kind of start to dive into this, one other thing I should mention is the introduction to this volume. I tried to be really comprehensive in kind of the resources that I cited. So if somebody does want to know about or like start to think about, you know, Islam in Turkish cinema or Islam in Nigerian cinema, or even, you know, representation of Muslims in like Chinese cinema, the work cited is pretty comprehensive, and I think would certainly get anyone started in thinking about this. So I'm not totally sure, to be honest. I mean, maybe I'll listen back to this in a couple years, but because I have lots of ideas, but I'm not really sure where it's going to go, to be honest. Mm-hmm. One kind of long-term project I think hopefully I'll be able to do sometime is something I've been calling the Cinematic Lives of Muslims. And this is, you know, I've kind of have an idea about this, but basically it's similar to this book in the sense of it's trying to understand this idea of Muslim cinema in a global context. So, you know, how does that operate in an Iranian context or Indonesian context or Nigeria or Britain or North America or these kind of things? But as I've gotten into that, a lot of what I've just been more interested in recently is thinking about Muslim movie stars and, you know, specifically in a British and U.S. context. So I've been thinking and writing a little bit about people like Mahershala Ali and Riz Ahmed and kind of what does their celebrity status enable them to do. So kind of in conversation with film analysis of their kind of film CV, where they're contesting these kind of dominant representations, you know, and dominant assumptions about who Muslims are, whether that might be like contesting anti-Blackness in Muslim communities or thinking about Riz Ahmed has been a strong promoter for kind of pushing back against the negative tropes. So I've been thinking about maybe doing that kind of like celebrity study of one or both of these figures and thinking about not only kind of their, you know, reading their films, but also thinking about like their social life and, you know, how does that extend through celebrity? But again, yeah, I'm like hardly writing anything. Hussein and I are working on a really cool project at the moment, which is coming to the end. And I am partly promising that to you since you're one of our contributors. So I swear it's coming close to the end.
Yeah.
But this, we're doing the Bloomsbury Handbook on Muslims and Popular Culture. And this, we take a similar approach in the sense that we are trying to look at a kind of global population of Muslims. We're trying to think about you know, issues of race or gender or these other things, but also how that comes through in specific cultural artifacts. So, yeah, I don't know when that'll come out, but we're basically at the end of gathering all of our contributors' entries. And I don't know if I'm working on anything else. I'm doing the podcast. The podcast is like the most fun thing to do. So yeah. I just keep doing that.
Yes, please do. Yes.
But I don't know. I don't know what else I'm doing.
We're doing so much already. You've already given us a lot between, like, you know, grade four English and then like Muslims in cinema and a handbook on pop culture. I think that's good.
Well, thank you. Yeah. Yeah, I'm trying. I'm trying. We're all struggling to make things happen, right?
Yeah. So. That's amazing. And I'm so excited for all your projects and just to be able to talk to you about it more. And I'm so enjoyed our conversation. We usually see each other, you know, at least once a year at the AAR, but this is like a nice catch up.
I know.
So hopefully we'll be able to see each other in person soon, one day, who knows?
But, one day.
I know, one day. It's just, you know, far in the future, if there's a future. But until then, I'm so grateful.
Oh, that's kind of a grim ending. The future, if there's a future. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Well, yes. Thank you for having me on the show. I feel kind of a little bit guilty since you probably privileged my book over others because of my partnership with you, but I'm glad that worked out.
So no, but you. I'm genuinely also interested in the topic. So it was a real pleasure to engage with the book and read it and think about ways I could incorporate it. And I'm glad that our listeners will be introduced to it as well. And this important topic on Muslims in media, I think it deserves the platform. I think you're doing great work. So I'm excited.
Well, thank you so much again.
Yeah. Well, we'll talk to you soon. Take care.
All right. Bye-bye.
And that was my conversation with Christian Peterson about his new edited volume, Muslims in the Movies, a Global Anthology. I hope you enjoyed our conversation together. And thank you so much for joining us. And I hope you'll join us again next time. So take care until then. Bye.